Happy Friday, everyone. A little bit later, have you made it to the Chris Kindle Market yet this year on Daly Plaza? We will talk to the general manager of the organization that puts that on. Now, not just in Daly Plaza, they've been in Naperville, I think, for a few years, and now outside Wrigley Field as well. So the Chris Kindle Market coming up a little bit later in the Business Lunch, but we start on Fridays generally with Andrea Haines, who is the editor of Blue Sky, the section of the Tribune that covers innovation, tech, and such. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch, Andrea.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
All right, I'm going to jump into it because there's a lot I want to talk to you about. First of all, we've talked about Redbox before and how they're trying to stay, like the DVD rental business, I think, was down like almost even 20% just in the last year. They're trying to figure out a way to stay alive. And so they've started now where we can stream movies through Redbox. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so Redbox, which has been around for about 15 years and is familiar to you probably from the kiosks outside grocery stores and dollar stores and things like that, they've now started an on-demand video streaming service.
And so it's cheap, I think, right? $3? How much for a movie?
The prices are pretty low, and it does not require a subscription. So I think their play here is, you know, they do have somewhat of a different customer who may not subscribe, who may go on their app or something to look for movies, and they now are providing a streaming possibility for them.
That's very nice because you don't have to pay a Netflix due or Amazon dues or whatever. You can go to Redbox through your phone or on your TV, I guess, and just without a monthly fee, download the movie you want to watch. I don't think anyone rents movies or watches movies on Netflix anymore, right? They're really not about that.
Yeah. You know, yeah, they've certainly their original content, TV shows and things like that have kind of taken over there.
Their movie selections.
By the same token, I don't want to be competing against Netflix, iTunes and all these other services. So it does seem like a little bit of a tough business.
Well, they're swimming in rough waters, that's for sure. But I think I'm going to check it out because through my TV service, I think to rent a movie is now $8 or $9. Who knows? You know, frankly, we don't watch movies much anymore because TV shows are so good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? There's so much competition for attention, not just necessarily for the individual rentals. But they, you know, they have a big customer base. They have 27 million customers in their loyalty program, according to the company. So they must be feeling like they can, you know, get some of that digital business and also probably negotiate with, you know, the studios to provide movies both ways.
And they're not giving up on rentals. I talked to the chief marketing officer of Redbox not too long ago, and we've talked about dollar stores. That's one area that is growing a lot, and they're hitching their little cubicles to them.
Definitely, yeah. They've specifically mentioned Dollar General, I know, as being a big source of, you know, that's basically a grocery store for a lot of people.
Okay, so let's switch industries now.
Sure.
There's a great story about electric cars are coming. Winter's coming. Electric cars are coming. And who's at risk there? The local auto mechanic, because they're not really equipped or preparing?
Yeah, well, and they just won't need as many. You know, I mean, a lot of these electric vehicles have maintenance schedules that are pretty gentle on the user, on the consumer.
So it's like the Maytag, you know, repairman of old.
Kind of. And it's like, it's kind of also just the business model where you would get people in for little repairs, you'd get to know them, they would become your customer. Like, that whole model won't necessarily be there if people don't need to come in for these little things along the way.
So that would mean I'd have to go and see my friends Ted and Rich at Deerfield Auto just for fun.
There you go.
Usually I'm in there once a month with one of my cars.
Yep. Yeah, so these cars don't need that much. You won't need oil changes. There aren't as many moving parts. They don't break down as often. And a lot of the parts you would need, you might be ordering them online, or they might be fixed via, you know, like a computer update kind of thing versus having to go to your local shop.
So, and here's what I think. I love, I was going to say I love numbers. I don't understand numbers, but I love statistics sometimes when they're simple. And this is a good one. There are 750,000 auto repair workers, like neighborhood auto repair workers in shops, that may be at risk here. Almost four times as many as the number of people employed by the coal mining industry.
Yeah, that's
I bring that up only because, you know, we're all worried about coal miners. Well, this is a much bigger industry that might be at risk.
Exactly. Yeah, that's coal miners have kind of become the poster child for these kind of disappearing jobs. And this is an even bigger category.
All right. So how much longer do they have, do you think?
You know, electric cars are coming quicker than everybody thought they would be. So, you know, they need to figure out ways to become sort of your IT for your that type of car, as well as your repairman, and they need to be figuring that out fast, it
all
sounds
right.
like.
One more then. YouTube, or maybe two more. We'll see where we are. But my daughter came to me probably 6 weeks or so ago, or maybe a month, and said, hey, have you heard YouTube stripped out all their gay shows or gay programming? And I'm like, well, that didn't happen. There's no way they would do that. Now I think I understand what happened. There's this sort of crackdown on questionable content, and they're losing the right to ad. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so, you know, YouTube obviously is a lot of the sort of user-generated content, people posting their own videos, and some of them become very popular and earn money that way. But YouTube was finding that there were advertisers who were winding up next to content that was questionable. So in an effort to try to stop that from happening, because, you know, you don't want to be next to content that's racist right. or content that's, you know, objectionable in some kind of way.
So if you're a drugstore and you're sort of getting a generically assigned to videos, you don't want to be on one of those videos.
Exactly. You're like, why is my ad running next to this thing that right. we would never support? We
right.
don't endorse this. You know, that's understandable and in something that YouTube needed to figure out. What they did, though, was kind of demonetize, they call it, the ability of these, you know, small creators to sell ads against their content. And in this sort of sweep to get rid of a lot of this, it caught up a lot of people in it that probably didn't deserve to have their ads stripped.
So they overcorrected.
And now you've got these creators who can't make much money. That, you know, the one in the story was making $6,000 a month. He dropped to $1,000 a month. And making those videos is a lot of effort. Like, I have some YouTubers that I follow, and I see the effort that goes into it, and I get that they need to make a little bit of money to make it worth their time.
And is there an effort on YouTube's part to fix this?
Yeah, so they've said they need to hire 10,000 people to actually review the content versus using more automated methods
to
strip away.
We're talking about coal miners and auto workers. YouTube alone is going to hire 10,000 people just to monitor this content.
To review content, to see, because some of the ones that are getting cut out don't seem to have deserved it.
All right. You are also the, is it content editor? What's the term?
For
Red Eye.
For Red Eye. So Red Eye, I'm like the boss of the editor. So,
okay.
you know, so, that team reports to me. They have their own editor, which is great because they have their own demo.
But good
but
golly,
yeah, I usually
Andrea,
come in with a copy of Red Eye for you every week.
I'm just, if I knew what to do for Christmas this year, is there anything that could help?
We are here to help you out. We have 48 pages that's almost all devoted to stuff that's happening in the next week or two. Everything from ugly sweater parties to the Nutcracker, the things like Chris Kindle Market that you mentioned, to smaller things to do. And there's also a list of 8 ways to celebrate Hanukkah.
Andrea Haynes, people can find that out on in the, where do they find that?
Yep, they find it out in the red boxes still in the red boxes every Thursday and through the weekend, and at redeyechicago.com.
Thanks for coming by. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Steve. I might be off next week, so you might see my friend Ben.
Okay, well, he's my friend too, so
yes.
I'll see our friend Ben.
Yep.
If I don't see you, have a great holiday.
Awesome, you too.
All right, the holidays are here, time to shop. What if you're an hourly worker and well, you can't wait maybe until Friday or the Friday after next to get your paycheck to cover some of these bills, some of the shopping. Tom Gimble, the CEO of LaSalle Network, is here to offer you some money.
I thought you were giving money away.
No. You're giving money away. Welcome back, friend.
Always good to be here.
So I was just saying, you know, it's that time of year. My daughter got home last night. My
yep.
son is on the road on the way home from Miami of Ohio. So I just want to give him a shout out. I'm sure he's listening.
He's not texting. He's listening to the radio. Hands are at 10 and 2. All is good.
Kidding me? He's not listening. all right. So, but tell me about this. There's this story that you sent over.
Yep.
Bloomberg was covering it about Walmart. Being, well, they're the biggest, whatever they do, they're the biggest one to do it.
Correct.
But allowing their workers to sort of tap into their check before it's a check.
Yeah, so the approach is, the layman's perspective on this is, retail workers don't make a lot of money. Their average part-time worker makes $10 an hour. I believe their full-time worker makes $13, and based on the margins in retail, that's about as high as you can go.
Walmart, by their scale or by their
scale
model,
their
they
margins.
Just can't pay more.
Yeah, and most retail and most high-volume retail shops. I mean, it's built into the model,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not a $70,000 a year job to be working in a retail store. And so what they're saying is, if you need money on Wednesday, we'll pay you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then next week you'll get the check for Thursday, Friday. And but it's not a full, you can't do it every day.
Right.
You can't do it every week. The number's 8 times a year you can exercise it.
So 8 times a year you can go to your people person. I think they're called, right?
The person
in charge of people
yeah.
at Walmart, that's the office. But you can say, "Hey, look, I got a dental bill that's due tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'd like to get paid.
Well, and I'm sure the way they're really going to go towards it is automating it with what's called a pay card or a cash card. And so it works just like it. I haven't verified this, right? But
sure.
This is how most of it works, is they verify it with like a debit card. And the money gets actually downloaded directly on the card. And my guess is that you'll be able to do it online, because the goal for this is to increase margin somewhere along the line. So you got to eliminate the people aspect.
So this is a way to sort of counter the increase in minimum wage fights or arguments, things like that. We can't give you the money, but we can give you what we are giving you a little bit sooner.
We'll give it to you sooner. And then we want to, everything's moving towards making it more interactive on a computer for employees. So if you want to do it, you'll log into a portal and you'll do it.
So, yeah, so you don't have to really find the person in charge.
Exactly right. You have a pay card.
Those people are kind of limited, too.
Yes, exactly. There are no
people. There are no more people.
There's not a lot of people. The ratio is not big.
Is this spreading? I mean, do you see this going?
I think you'll see it a little bit with different companies. Part of it ends up being a marketing play. I mean, you got 100,000 employees, and people are going to do it, and then they're not going to get money, and then they're going to get double billed. And there's always going to be problems,
right?
With any technology, it changes. But it's a nice perk. It's a nice opportunity for people to have.
Nice thing to be able to do for workers.
Yeah.
If you're not going to pay them a living wage.
I didn't mean that. You're not sucking me into this conversation.
No, I did not mean that. No, I didn't mean that. I was being smart, but I didn't mean it. So, but if you're Walmart or if you're another employer,
yeah.
I would imagine there's a risk here too, right? Because the ship might tip to one side if everyone wants their money early.
Well, that's why they limit it to 8 times a year. Because what companies do is they're paying, and the bigger the company and you're managing, I mean, it gets pretty technically on the finance side,
right?
But you're managing the float, you're borrowing money, you have debt. What everyone sees is, oh, this company made $1 billion in the quarter, right? So they have all the money in the world. Yeah, but they also have X billions of dollars of debt, and they're financing it, and they're moving it around. So companies don't want to lose what's called the float, and they make interest on the float, even though there's not much interest going on right now. So it gets a little bit more technical.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, at LaSalle Network.
Yes.
And have a great Hanukkah.
I actually am a Christmas guy.
You are a Christmas guy.
I am.
Well, I learned that, too.
Yes.
Well, have a great Christmas.
I am. No, we can get into a religious conversation next week.
Wait, I withdraw my Christmas until next week.
Right. I'll see you next week. I'm good for that.
Nice to talk to you.
Always good to. Happy holidays to you.
Now, do you ever wonder, you know what you make, right? And so how about other people who make what you make? How much do they save? How much do they pay for housing or for insurance, things like that? How do you fit into the people your age, or the people in your income? It would probably help you make decisions down the road. There's a new website, sort of an online group, I guess you'd call it, called Status Money. And we'll talk to the founder a little bit later in the business lunch. But right now, let's enjoy Christmas a little bit. On a phone line is Myron Beister-Priebe. She's the general manager of German American Events, which means nothing to you. But maybe how about this? She's in charge of the Christkindl markets all over the city. Myron, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yeah, thank you. Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. So how about that? Are you the boss of all these Christkindl markets? Did I put that correctly?
That's correct.
And so I was just reading about I wonder sometimes about how long something has to be around or how successful it has to be considered a tradition or to become sort of a holiday staple. And it seems like the market at Daily Plaza is there. It started, what? I was surprised to read 1996 right here across the plaza from me at Pioneer Court, and then moved to Daily Plaza, I think, about a year later, right?
That's correct. In 1996, we started the market on Pioneer Court, 401 North Michigan Avenue, and then by the invitation of then Mayor Richard Daley, we were invited to come to Daily Plaza and have been there since 1997.
Man, it's been no looking back either, I would imagine. It just looks like it goes gangbusters year after year. Is that the case?
We have quite the popular market, for sure. And it has become an absolute tradition for Chicagoans and also those visiting Chicago.
And through the economic downturn of about, 6, 7, 8 years ago, can you sort of gauge where people are or where we are as a region economically by the crowd there? Does it go up and down, or is it pretty consistent?
I would actually have to say it is pretty consistent. I have been doing this for 12 years myself, and I do have to say that I've really never seen a downturn, even with the economy issues or the economic issues that we've had in 2007 and 2008, for example. So that was quite interesting. But you know what? I think part of that reason is for our event is that it's a free event. There is no admission for it.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, are you measuring that by feet in the square or by dollars spent at the square?
I would probably say, first off, by the attendance.
Yeah.
And then secondly, our vendors obviously give us feedback on how they're doing and in general, and we've never really had complaints by anybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Mara and I go almost every year, never spend any money, so it's a great event that way, too.
Well, you know what? It's meant for that. It's meant to, the purpose is that it's inviting people to come regardless of how much money they make.
Yeah, well, I'm lying, too, because I'm pretty sure the beer halls have seen me. So explain for me the business part of this. Who is it, this association? Do you use this as a moneymaker? Is it for the individual vendors? Or what's the business angle of it behind it?
Well, so we're a subsidiary of the German-American Chamber of Commerce of the Midwest. And we're a non-for-profit organization. And our organization within that subsidiary is the German-American Events. And so for us, this is a way to provide a platform for businesses to come and kind of test out the markets. And that means, for example, it started with German companies coming here, being able to test the market, see how their products are received by the American public, and then to make a decision if they would like to enter the U.S. And open up businesses here. And that has actually been very successful. And that's kind of the business model behind it.
Can you give me an example of that? What company came here and then decided that they were going to test the waters and it worked?
Well, we actually have several of them. We have also the larger known Christmas company is Käthe Wohlfahrt. They have found this to become a business entry model and have been successful, and they're located at several markets. And also, for example, as of the latest is Steiff. Steiff is a company that sells high-end toys. Stuffed animals and their bear is the most popular one, as well as children's clothing. And they were able to find a niche, actually, at the Chris Kindle Market in Chicago, and now are located at all of the markets.
Maren, that's a great story, but I think we need a German word for niche, because I don't want you quoting the French.
They found a leg in of the German world.
That works. Perfect. So, okay. So we started at Daly Plaza. You're spreading out a little bit, right? Naperville's been going for a few years. I drove by Wrigley Field last Saturday night and see a market there, and that's all you guys, correct?
That's correct. The Chris Kindle Market at Naper Settlement in Naperville, and also the park at Wrigley. Those are also the additions to the Chris Kindle Market on Daly Plaza.
Is there any worry about diluting one crowd from another, or are they completely different audiences?
No. I think partially, yes, they are different audiences, and a lot of people also like the idea of not having to travel great distances if one is closer to them, but we still see over 1.5 million visitors, and that hasn't decreased in Chicago. You know, we get a lot of visitors that tell us, oh, you know, I'm in Naperville today, but I was in Chicago yesterday, or vice versa. And so they still kind of frequent, I pretty much think, all the markets.
Well, we do have the tradition, you know, in the city, and it's changed, I think, or diminished a little bit about coming down and seeing the windows decorated at what used to be Marshall Fields or the city Christmas tree. And the market is a great way to sort of tie all of that together. So I would imagine that's a great way to come downtown. So I'm assuming that these markets aren't unique to Chicago. Are there German entities running these in cities around the country? And if so, any idea how many?
I'm pretty sure there may be. I'm not sure what the number would be. There are, you know, the traditional farmers markets that you find pretty much throughout major cities and even smaller metropolitans that they have this theme going year-long. So what we like to say is that ours is the more traditional German style, and the type that you find all throughout Europe, actually, in German-speaking countries. So there's a little bit of a difference, I would assume, simply because we are very much into the cultural and traditional part of the market.
So that's interesting to me, because I just, you know, to be honest, Maren, I kind of considered this or thought this would be a sort of a cookie-cutter that is duplicated around the country, but you're saying that's maybe not so much the case.
I find a lot of times that people think they can do this type of market, but it's not that easy to do. And a lot of it comes actually also from knowing the tradition and the background to it, and also knowing your audience. Well, and here in the Midwest, we have a very large German audience, so it's very helpful. And also, people who've been to Europe and seen the markets there, they compliment us on how traditional we are compared to the non-traditional markets that are, like I said, similar to farmers' markets.
Well, you've certainly done it well, and it's become part of Chicago's Christmas tradition, so congratulations for that. Maren Biester-Priebe, the General Manager, Jimmer and American Events. Thanks for joining us today.
Dankeschön und frohe Weihnachten.
Dankeschön. We'll see you later.
Auf Wiedersehen.
And happy Friday to you, everybody. All right, so speaking of being in the millions or being in the 50,000s or 100,000s, you know what you make. How do others who make about the same spend their money or save their money or do with whatever what they want to do with their money? I think that's one of the answers or questions, really, that can be answered by Status Money. The founder, Majd Maksad, is on a phone line now, and he's going to sort it out for me. Majd, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about, now this is a relatively new venture, right? You guys just kicked this off, I think, in September?
You got it. We've been working on it for about a year and a half. And, for the last few months, we kind of launched the website, and we've been available to anybody in the U.S.
So do people introduce you as a Goldman Sachs guy? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I'm not the Goldman guy. My co-founder, I'm the Citibank guy.
Citibank's a little better, I guess.
Yeah, well, these days I'm hoping people really look at me as the founder of Status Money as opposed to an ex-banker.
Well, I hope so, too. Let's talk about Status Money because let me describe to you what I think it is, and then you tell me where I'm wrong. But I'm fascinated in, you know, you drive by someone's house or you work with someone or you have a friend. You're like, well, how do they do it? Or, you know, how much money can they be making? Or are they doing with what I make good things that are completely different than what I think I can afford? And Status Money sort of allows you to compare yourself to other people who are in similar income brackets. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're right on it. So the way we decided to found this company is I was a data scientist for almost 10 years. My co-founder here is about the same. And we observed a lot of people had a lot of curious questions about how other people were spending their money, how much other people make, but honestly also about what interest rates other people were borrowing at, or what interest rates they were earning on their savings, or how they were investing their money. And the way that we decided to solve this problem is to allow people to compare themselves completely anonymously to each other. And by doing so, people can learn exactly how much people in their neighborhood are earning, or how they're spending across, you know, entertainment or rent or utilities or really any other category. This is kind of what we're calling the democratization of financial information.
And it's interesting because in many ways we're all going down the same route. We're all headed toward the same destination, if you will, but we're all doing it sort of extremely independently. We don't have the knowledge of how we fit in with other people, which I think would be beneficial just for peace of mind. If you know, like, don't sweat it, you're ahead of the game, or maybe you should sweat it, you're behind. Just to know that would be helpful. Okay, so I go to the website, statusmoney.com, and ask me to join. I join, and then what do? I put in my data, and how do I get the information? How does it work?
Yeah, you got it. You go to statusmoney.com. It's going to ask you for some basic information, your name, your email address, your birth date. And it's going to use that information to sync with your TransUnion credit report. So you are going to get free access to your credit report 24/7. It also syncs with your bank accounts, your investment accounts, your savings accounts, so that you're able to get an automated flow of all of your transactions that are coming in. And this allows our algorithms to look through each of your transactions. Again, this happens securely and privately, to try to find ways for you to save money. If you're paying too much interest, it's going to let you know that.
So,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Maj.
Yeah, and you're able to compare yourself through the profile that you create to people who are exactly like you across six dimensions. These dimensions include your age group, your income, where you live, your credit score, and whether or not you're a homeowner or a renter. All these things dramatically affect who you will be compared against.
And
now, you can always compare yourself to the national average or really any custom group you choose as well.
So you're not just entering data and getting back answers. This is, in many ways, is going to help you manage or control your investments, your accounts, and things like that.
That's right. It's a personal finance management website. So it'll let you track all your spending, set budgets so that you're not overspending in any given month, check your credit score, monitor your net worth over time. So it really is a full-service financial services, financial management platform.
Maj Moksad is the founder of Status Money. Listen, thanks for explaining it to me. I know you just got a few months under your belt. Good luck, and keep us posted, okay?
I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.